See if Carl is ready. Okay, you ready, Carla? All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the November 19th meeting of the Portland City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. So some introductory points here. You may be aware already, but there are actually two related hearings today regarding the comprehensive plan. The first hour, we'll discuss agenda item 1209, which is a series of supporting documents, and then the second item 1210 is testimony on the plan itself. We'll take testimony in both cases, but we're going to limit individual testimony to 2 minutes because we believe we're going to have a very large number of people who are going to want to speak to us on these documents, and that's going to be true at this hearing and at some other hearings which follow. This is the beginning of the public hearing portion of readopting our city comprehensive plan. It's a big deal. It governs how we're going to grow for the next 20 years, and we're estimated to grow by about 250,000 people and 140,000 jobs, and those are daunting statistics of change that we're trying to shape here. So since good places don't happen by accident, we're going to do some planning with your help. We've already had a lot of help, and we've had about 4,000 comments, I think, at the Planning and Sustainability Commission on the proposed draft. And I want to thank the commission for their huge amount of service. We'll be hearing from them as we proceed today. So let's start with our director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability after Carla reads the items. Why don't you go ahead and read both of them, and then Susan can proceed.
Are we just taking 1209, the 2 o'clock, and then the 3 o'clock at 3?
1209 at 2 o'clock, so I guess go ahead and read 1209 now, and we'll wait and read 1210 then.
1209, adopt new and amended supporting documents for an update of Portland's comprehensive plan, accept report of the Citizen Involvement Committee.
Ms. Anderson.
Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, good afternoon. As the mayor mentioned, the first hour of testimony today is focused just on the four comprehensive plan supporting documents. The four documents include, first, a report that outlines the work of our community involvement committee that has met for about 5 or 6 years now. Second, the economic opportunity analysis. This report shows that we have an adequate land supply to meet our employment forecasts. The third report is the growth scenarios report, and the fourth is the citywide systems plan. We've asked the public to focus their comments just on these four reports, and then comments on the rest of the comp plan can be at 3 p.m. I'd really recommend that after you listen to the comments today that we hold the record open for written testimony until January 7th to give people ample time to comment. I'm not going to talk more about the reports. We had 5 work sessions, a lot of, 10 hours of time together getting ready for today's meetings. I would like to invite both Stan Penkin and Howard Shapiro up to join me. They both provided a lot of leadership, in particular on the Community Involvement Committee, and they want to share their thoughts about the report that you're looking at and the public process.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Can't lose you now, Howard.
Good afternoon. I'm Howard Shapiro. I'm the vice chair of the Planning Sustainability Commission, but I'm also, by some quirk of fate, the chair of the CIC, the Citizen Involvement Committee. I say that because the chair of the committee was commanded to be a commissioner, and I was the one who stepped up. Having said that, I want to talk about the, genesis of this whole idea, which began 5 or 6 years ago, I think, with Visioning Portland and the idea of a citizen involvement committee, a cross-section of people who could adequately and correctly report what they were feeling at the grassroots as the planning and so forth of the city went forward. That idea was accepted by 2 mayors previous to this, and the process took about a year vetting the correct number of people that would serve on this committee. through that year, people hung in and were very stalwart about how they felt about it. I want to read that they were a group that were committed to equity, to inclusion, and to a vibrant future for our city. And we met for 6 long years. Stan will report on the outcome of it at the end of it. But the process, I must say, hasn't been perfect. There'll never be enough time to hear things, and there'll be too much time to push things through, and I'm sure you'll hear about that today. And I think it's all correct. But I think this is an important, correct, and really vital part of what the whole city functions best about, and that's hearing at the grassroots on a regular basis from people who hear and see and feel things in their community. People are committed to equity, to inclusion, and to, again, the vibrance of our city. I can't say enough about the people. They were and they are amazing, and they do represent a cross-section of what our city has come to represent. I also want to take a moment now, if I may, to, pardon me, I just ran from a parking meter, and I'm, if I may, to really salute the people who really make this happen, the people of the Planning Bureau. Susan and her staff are remarkable.
We even bring you water.
Thank you. Susan and her staff are remarkable. And the Citizen Involvement Committee is part, I think, in grateful for the time and the energy that they all put into it. If I named the names, it would be like an Academy Award of list people who have all supported this. Having said that, and having said that the process isn't perfect, we encourage that it go forward, that you continue this kind of citizen involvement and the citizen grassroots reporting back. Having said that, I want to let Stan Penkin say a few words about how we finally ended up and how I hope the committee can go forward.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Howard is a hard act to follow, but I'll give it a shot. My name is Stan Penkin. I am an original member of the Community Involvement Committee that came together nearly 6.5 years ago to begin its work on the outreach efforts of the Portland Plan and later the Comprehensive Plan. I was a young man back then and had no idea that what was advertised as 4 meetings a year for 3 years would evolve into something far more extensive and exceedingly meaningful. Now, after 50 full committee meetings and countless subcommittee meetings, workshops, hearings, and so on, I want to share some thoughts about the public involvement process. First, what was done? A wide range of public information and outreach activities was implemented by BPS for the Comprehensive Plan update, including a popular interactive map app, a website, and an e-newsletter. Among the many face-to-face outreach activities were table events, community meetings, neighborhood walks, a dedicated helpline, district liaison office hours, and open house events, plus many mailings to property owners and articles and advertisements in community newspapers. These activities informed the public about the proposed draft elements and its effects on specific properties. It answered questions and ensured that people who wanted to provide testimony to the PSC would be able to. There is considerable data available about the extent of these efforts, which I will not take time to present here. As with any initiative, especially one of such major scope, entailing massive data and complex information, there are numerous challenges. There are 3 major areas for improvement that we observed. First is transparency. All involved value the opinions of all community members, and BPS made an unprecedented effort to reach out to everyone. An unfortunate mishap occurred when PSC, in responding to community concerns, extended the comment period last March. Staff, however, had continued their original schedule of preparing reports based on comments that had already been received. Some community members felt their testimonies were overlooked. All the testimonies were eventually included in future discussions, but the damage of distrust was already done. To maintain the highest standards of transparency, we must make extra effort to educate individuals on the involvement process so miscommunication and confusion does not occur. Second, is making a plan to continue to build upon established relationships and to build new ones. This is especially important for underrepresented groups. We heard comments like, this doesn't affect me, why should I care, and if I'm not being heard, why should I get involved? In a long process, there won't always be action items for community comment, but keeping up the public's interest should be a priority. It is important for BPS to coordinate with ONI and relevant community groups to assure that leadership and capacity building continue for all groups in order to develop the knowledge and capacity to fully participate. Third is funding for outreach. After 6 years of experience and a learning curve, we should be able to provide better future funding for additional staff providing outreach, for broadening the reach of our communication tools, and for a designated liaison to communicate between BPS and underrepresented communities. As we move forward towards implementation, we believe there should continue to be a CIC entity to, one, evaluate community involvement programs for multiple bureaus, two, to review involvement plans for individual projects, and three, to create and maintain a community involvement manual for implementing the comp plan goals and policies. Without strong, meaningful, and consistent public involvement, the comp plan will not guide us to the outcomes that we seek. The CIC recognizes that city resources are a significant factor in considering future oversight. While we believe resources were responsibly allocated, much of those resources were dedicated to those ready and willing to engage. Although we are impressed by the high levels of community response, we feel that underrepresented groups that are often hesitant to join the process were not pursued as much as they might have been. As we address the goals and policies of the comp plan, the involvement of our diverse communities is as important as ever. Resources must be allocated in a fair and equitable manner. I am honored to have had the opportunity to work with so many devoted individuals, from my fellow committee members to the professional and dedicated staff at BPS. It was a collaborative effort wherein CIC and staff shared ideas, including constructive criticism, and were willing to learn from each other. The committee thanks and acknowledges the many staff members who guided us. While we cannot mention everyone, we want to especially express our appreciation to Marty Stockton, Deborah Stein, Eden Dabbs, and Sarah Wright. And I would be remiss if I did not mention the able leadership of our chair, Mr. Howard Shapiro. While the comprehensive plan quickly approaches its adoption stage, it will not be the end, but rather the foundation of an ever-evolving progression of making Portland the best it can be for everyone in the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both.
May I just add one more thing? There's a quote that C.E.S. Wood is quite famous for that says, good citizens are the riches of a city. That's really what is eloquently demonstrated here in the work of this committee. We thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you both.
Move on to the testimony.
Let's do. Thank you very much. Okay, so we have, I don't believe we have any invited testimony, so we're going to move directly to the sign-up sheet. And again, this is on the supporting documents. If you're here to speak on the comp plan itself, that's what begins at 3. So, Carla?
Look, we have 30 people signed up for this item. And the first three, please come on up, are number 1, 2, and 3, James Peterson, Bob Solinger, and Rehana Ansari. And they'll be followed by Troy Clark, Rick Brown, and Meg Ruby, number 4, 5, and 6.
You get to be first. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is James Peterson. I'm here today speaking as a citizen. If you've read the 2035 comp plan, you'll be greatly amazed that citizens have been greatly removed from that document. You should really consider getting it more in line with Goal 1. Okay, I'm really concerned about the numbers. There's written testimony here that this is being, the numbers, projected numbers are grossly inadequate or overstated. The projected growth of 120,000, 24,000 housing units that the city of Portland is planning for in the 2035 comp plan has some flawed assumptions. Metro is using a capture rate of 72%. for their forecast, where their historical capture rate has been 62%. That's 8.6% higher than has ever been achieved. The city of Portland is planning on capturing 60% of that inflated number, when the best they've ever been able to achieve is 36%. Thus, the more likely number of housing units should be 68,000 units instead of 124,000 units. The same thing happened during the Southwest Community Plan when Metro projected that the city of Portland can achieve 50,000 housing units, and the city of Portland requested 70,000, and Metro was more in line. Clark County is capturing 60%.
Keep going. 56%
of the growth rate outside the UGB. Most of the housing units planned in the city of Portland are for mixed-use complexes. The majority of the people, 80% of the respondents, prefer single-family residence. There's a big discrepancy in what people want and what the city is planning for.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. We've got your written testimony here, so thank you very much. Mr. Salinger, I think you're next.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm here representing the Audubon Society of Portland and our 16,000 members in the metropolitan region. First, I want to thank you for your votes on the fossil fuel resolutions over the last couple of weeks. Those are historic votes, and today you have another chance to move us forward to a cleaner, healthier, and more prosperous future. We are here to support the economic opportunities analysis as drafted. We think the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has done a good job, and we particularly want to focus on marine industrial lands, on river industrial. The approach that the economic opportunities analysis takes really focuses in on three things to meet industrial land supply. Rather than destroying green fields, going to natural areas, rolling back environmental regulations, basically what it says is take better care of what you already have, use it better, clean it up, put it into productive use, and that's how we'll get our jobs, and that's how we'll deal with our demand for marine industrial lands. It says clean up your brownfields. We have over 900 acres in this region. We need to clean them up and put them back into productive use for our communities. It says intensify use of the existing land base. We can make a lot better use of the land we already have. And finally, it says stop converting industrial lands to other uses. Be more careful about that. And we have a lot of cases in point where industrial interests have converted lands. I think about the shopping mall out at the airport. I think about Terminal 1, which is now condominiums. Too often, industrial landowners have cashed out, taken the money, and then come back and said, we need more land. We need to stop that kind of pattern. We know you're going to be under tremendous pressure to bring back Hayden Island into the comp plan. It's not in there now as industrial land. You're going to hear about jobs, but the plan recognizes that it's not going to create a whole lot of jobs. You're going to hear about cargo, but cargo forecasts have been notoriously inaccurate. And you're going to hear about balance, but we have a river that's already tremendously degraded. If we're concerned about balance, we need to protect what we have left. Finally, I would remind Council that the Port had an opportunity to step up a couple years ago and bring forward a plan that would actually protect the environment and the community. Instead, they stepped out. They walked away from the table. They said they couldn't do it, they wouldn't do it, and they should not be able to use the comp plan as a backdoor way to bring it back in. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Rehana Ansari here to testify on the economic opportunity analysis on behalf of the Portland Business Alliance. The Alliance has been tracking the comprehensive plan update for the last 2 years, and we would like to commend staff for all their hard work to date. We plan to provide input on the broader plan, but this afternoon I'd like to focus on a few assumptions that have been made to fulfill the State of Oregon's land use Goal 9 requirements on economic development. First, the proposal, or in summary, we're concerned about the following. One, the proposal to accommodate a low marine cargo forecast. The low forecast is not justified by recent market trends, nor is it consistent with existing plans that have been approved by Portland City Council, including the Portland Plan, We Build Green Cities campaign, and the Greater Portland Export Plan. All these plans aim to promote our traded sector economy. As we have shown our value of jobs reports, export-related jobs pay on average 18 6% more than non-exporting jobs across sectors. Manufacturing jobs that produce traded sector goods are also found to provide higher wages and better benefits than non-manufacturing jobs, particularly for communities of color and for those with less than a four-year college degree. A low marine cargo forecast does not promote our traded sector economy or middle-income job growth. 2, aspirational brownfield redevelopment. The EOA assumes that 60% of brownfields will convert over the next 20 years. This is dependent in large part on the ability of the state to enact and fund legislation and programs. Meantime, brownfields do not often convert to industrial land due to cost burdens and onerous regulations associated with their redevelopment. Finally, the EOA relies on golf course conversion. Golf courses are privately owned, and an owner must be willing to sell their property. Not all of the golf courses that are counted for in the EOA have confirmed an interest to sell. We urge that the EOA reflect market realities to help ensure a prosperous and equitable future for all Portlanders. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Next three are Troy Clark, Rick Brown, and Meg Ruby. That's 4, 5, and 6. It'll be followed by Kristen Myra, David Red Thunder, and Jeff Stone, 7, 8, and 9.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name's Troy Clark. I'm the president of the Friends of Smith and Bybee Lakes, and I'm on the Columbia Sioux Watershed Council. And for years, we have seen industry encroach on our city's natural areas, putting added stress on our natural systems. It has gotten to the point where we must draw a line and protect what remains of our precious natural areas. The current industrial land strategy laid out in the Economic Opportunities Analysis draft takes an important first step in this direction. I'm glad to see that redevelopment of contaminated brownfields is emphasized in the city's strategy. It only makes sense to put these long vacant lands back into use before paving over our last remaining natural areas like West Hayden Island. The reclaiming of these contaminated areas will bring needed economic drivers that make our local communities more vibrant and promise local economic growth. Along with this new approach in the EOA, I urge that we retain and reinforce environmental protection on the current industrial lands along rivers and floodplains. Think of the Columbia Slough in particular. These are some of the most important natural resources for our city, and they need to be protected. 20 years of involvement on the Columbia Sioux Watershed Council and the Smith and Bybee Wetlands Natural Area Advisory Committee have given me insight to the importance of these waterways, wetlands, and adjacent natural areas and the role they play in the health of our local environment and community. I support the EAO's current industrial land strategy as it provides industrial lands and the jobs our communities need, while at the same time protecting the last few natural areas open spaces that make Portland such a great place to live. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. My name is Rick Brown, and I'm here today on behalf of 350 PDX, where I serve on the Volunteer Board of Directors. It's pleasing to reflect back on the landmark resolutions regarding fossil fuel transportation and infrastructure that you all passed in the last couple of weeks, so thank you again. At the same time, it's sobering to reflect on that despite such measures, we're experiencing and will continue to experience the adverse effects of climate change for a long time to come. Measures that will keep the majority of fossil fuel reserves in the ground are essential, but so are measures that will provide resilience, that will be adaptive in the face of inevitable climate disruption. It's in consideration of those concerns that I'm here today to support the current Economic Opportunities Analysis draft. Its approach to providing protections for streamside and floodplain areas while concentrating industrial development on already developed portions of the landscape will help ensure that our watersheds will be better able to absorb the more frequent heavy precipitation that we can expect to be part of our changing climate. In this, the EOA builds on the Climate Action Plan, which recognizes the importance of intact riparian areas and helping reduce temperatures of urban streams and in responding to changes in seasonal precipitation patterns. 350 PDX urges your support of the current draft of the economic opportunities analysis. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. My name is Meg Ruby. I live in Southeast Portland. I'm a forest ecologist, earned my degree at OSU. I'm a mother of two teenage boys, and I'm active in my faith community, St. Michael and All Angels Episcopal Church. I'm here because I'm a proud Portlander. I'm deeply invested in our city. I've worked over the last 16 years to enrich our city's green spaces as in our schools, our parks, and our open spaces. I've worked with kids on hands-on science learning projects in these places, and I do it so they learn science and they're exposed to nature, birds, critters, etc. 14 years ago, I founded a learning garden that's going strong still today at Atkinson Elementary, even as my oldest graduated last year from Cleveland. I helped depave and install the community garden at Fraser Park. This matters to me. I believe it's actually never been more important than it is today, in part because what Rick referenced, which is the rolling out of change in our climate that is today. But I believe it's never been more important for Portland to remain committed to these high standards of stewardship of our shared environment. And I believe it's essential that the city continue to uphold the moral and ethical obligation we all have to conserve our natural resources for generations to follow. The economic opportunities analysis and subsequently the comprehensive plan are important because it will guide land use decisions at all levels over the next 20 years. I support the current draft of this plan. Actions laid out in this version, including cleaning up contaminated brownfields, increasing efficiency and intensity of use on current industrial land, and protecting against conversion away from industrial, will ensure that Portland's economy can continue to prosper. And in addition, these actions will help maintain a healthy Willamette River and provide for cleaning up of contaminated sites and will protect our last few remaining green fields and natural areas. Portland has been an environmental leader for many years, and this EOA is the next step in that direction.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Next three are 789, Kristen Mira, David Red Thunder, and Jeff Stone, and they'll be followed by Byron Tennant, Janet Labar, and Patty Iverson Summer, 10, 11, and 12.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Kristen Mara. I'm the executive director of the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association. We're a nonprofit based here in Portland, and the Port of Portland is one of our members. I'm here to talk about the growth forecast for the port in the draft comp plan. This Columbia River that we are on is the nation's number one gateway in the United States for wheat and second in the nation for soy. When you consider all of the grains moving on our river system, we are the third largest grain export gateway in the world. We're also tops on the West Coast for wood exports and for mineral bulk exports. We are an export-heavy system, including significant quantities of Oregon goods, and we play an important role in balancing our nation's trade deficit. It's been 5 years since the Columbia River Channel Deepening Project was completed. And in those 5 years, over $1 billion, that's with a B, in new private and public investment has occurred along the lower river. Of that $1 billion, $370 million has been invested right here in the Port of Portland area. And that's taken place at locations like Vigor, Columbia Grain, Louis Dreyfus Grain, Shaver Towboat Company, and many others. All of these investments were made because leaders recognized the steady growth in cargo movement, which has occurred on our river system for over 50 years, and that this growth is forecasted to continue, including here in Portland. The Port of Portland serves a wide variety of bulk cargoes, which have grown to over 23 million tons a year, valued at $13 billion. And we know that those numbers are impressive, but what's most important to people is what it means to the folks who live here. This river system directly supports over 40,000 jobs in the region, and over half of those are right here in the Portland area. We know the Port of Portland will continue to play a key economic development role here in the city, and we urge you to recognize the trends in economic activity in our area and change assumptions in the draft comp plan from a low forecast to a medium forecast for the port. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Go ahead, please.
Hello, my name is David Red Thunder. I am the West Haden Island Chairman, recognized by High Noon. I've lived on there for 7 years, and I like to speak about the creatures. There's 9 types of mammals, 4 types of amphibians, and a variety of species of birds. And they are dealing with 80,000 cubic yards of dredge spoils that have been placed on there for a future foundation of a deep terminal trading post. But anyways, there's a path that leads the homeless problem. I mean, we have a homeless problem here, and there's a path down there that leads, and there's not secured. They can go down there, and the pictures I've seen, it's contaminated right now. I mean, the garbage, the debris, and it is the vegetation line of above the vegetation line below, because the state controls the waters that go up in there. But above that, you can't stop the. I mean, the port has. I don't know if deliberately, but since this path has been put in, the increase of human human consumption of all the feces and the bathroom problems and the dogs. And I speak about the animals. That we have our state bird back there, which is the Western Meadowlark, and we have the beaver back there. And I've talked to the port about it, and now I'm just here to speak about the creatures, because down the road, I mean, it seems like you have your commission, this other county commission that votes, and they bring these votes down to you guys, and you guys are the final vote. Well, they voted to go ahead and follow through with making this into an industrial land. And so I'm here today to speak about the creatures, and we have this habitat pressed up against the city boundaries, and I think we should protect these black-tailed deer, the beavers, and the amphibians, and all these variety of species of birds. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Mr. Mayor, City Councilors, I'm Jeff Stone. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. We're your second largest sector of ag. We are proud to be in Multnomah County, and we have several members in this great city. My purpose of my appearance today is to express concern over the city downgrading the growth potential of the Portland Harbor to a low-growth forecast, contrary to the recommendation by the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Trade is critical, and the city of Portland needs to be an active player in revitalizing the Portland Harbor. I'm a former chief of staff for the Metro Council, and so I've been in the planning space quite a bit. Planning decisions by cities and by the region make a difference on wages, the economy, and community prospects. With a low-growth forecast, the draft comprehensive plan does a poor job of recognizing the economic impact and the capacity of the harbor. The assumptions are lacking focus in reality and will impact the farm communities well outside of our jurisdiction here. The port slowdown during this recent time really harmed the nursery and greenhouse industry. Almost 20% of the export containers shipped out of the Pacific Northwest carry agriculture products. The cost of a truck for a container to go to the city of Portland is $250. It's $800 additional to go to Tacoma, and it's $1,200 to go up to Seattle. So that already adds traffic to an I-5 corridor that's already a mess. Nurseries ship more than 80 million environmentally friendly trees and plants through the port system. So it's just not a Willamette Valley thing. Ontario is seeing economic downturns because of the container issue. And so I would recommend, because we have some of the best agricultural crops in the United States, and in my letter to you, I explain all the different reasons why we think that you should move the forecast from low back up to medium, and I thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Just a couple of follow-up questions, if I can. I don't want to slow up the pace of testimony because we've got a lot of people who want to speak, but almost ask Ms. Answer this question, but you mentioned this in passing, and that is your members' products are leaving this region and going worldwide by container, right?
Yes.
And so the port has lost its container port, and although the Port of Portland has our name in it, it's actually a state agency. So state government has failed to negotiate a successful labor agreement by which we have a container port. What's happened to your members in the 2 years since we've had a container port? Have they lost volume? Are they still growing? Have they shouldered this additional cost of shipping freight beyond the region? I understand the traffic impacts, but I'm wondering about the business impacts. Are they growing or are they shrinking?
Mr. Mayor, thank you very much for the question. It is loading cost into the cost of production to get the product now to a different port. And I'm with you that the Port of Portland, we need to work with the Port of Portland to try to get back the capacity that they once had. With Hanjin leaving, that really hurt a lot of agricultural products. So for my members, what they're seeing is it's harder and more expensive to get that product out because they're having to load a truck, which they don't want to do. They want to go to shorter
I understand
distance.
Logistical difference, but my question is what's happened to the business volume? Has it gone up? Has it gone down? I've heard economists argue, including one in a recent newspaper article, that this is not an issue. They're doing fine. Is that your impression?
Well, because we grow some of the best stuff in the world, we do ship quite a bit. But they're finding it that it's harder to make it pencil out by having the increased cost. And so the differential between shipping a container to the Port of Portland and to Seattle is quite a difference.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Okay. Let's take the next three, please.
Our Byron Tennant, Janet Labar, and Patty Iverson Summer, number 10, 11, and 12. And they'll be followed by Kate Ross, Mike Rosen, and Jeff Giesler, 13, 14, and 15.
Welcome. Hi, I'm Byron Tennant, speaking on behalf of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, or NECN. NECN represents 12 inner north and northeast neighborhoods and serves over 60,000 Portlanders. Its work focuses on making sure our communities are safe, livable, healthy, vibrant, and inclusive. NECN would like to show support for the general approach taken in the Economic Opportunities Analysis, EOA, to meet industrial land's demand. We submitted comments on an earlier draft of the EOA in spring of this year. It appears many of our concerns were, in fact, considered in this updated version. We applaud the strategies laid out in the plan that focus on redevelopment and intensification of our current industrial land-based use, rather than looking to natural areas and open space to satisfy new industrial demand. Brownfields have long compromised our neighborhoods, and we look forward to the city prioritizing their cleanup and reestablishing these currently unused parcels of land as economic drivers for our communities. It only makes sense that we look towards these already developed parcels of land, in many cases located within our communities, to provide us with much-needed economic growth. We support strategies laid out in the plan that intensify and retain existing industrial lands and maintain and in some cases improve the economic benefits of the current industrial inventory. While we're generally supportive of the suite of strategies laid out in the EOA, we feel there is one major flaw. The current strategy to rezone and convert portions of several North Portland golf courses into industrial lands remains in this version and is not consistent with the direction of most other policies within the EOA. Instead of focusing on putting the current built landscape into better use, it proposes to pave over some of the last remaining open space in the neighborhood that are already park deficient. These open spaces provide clean air, recreational opportunities, and wildlife habitat in a very developed portion of the city, the Columbia Corridor, and to lose them would be very unfortunate. We understand that there's need for industrial land, but should not trump the health of the environmental needs of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you. My name is Janet Labar. I'm the President and CEO of Greater Portland, Inc. We are the regional economic development organization responsible for marketing Greater Portland to companies that are seeking to expand or relocate. We work with the public sector and private sector partners to bring these companies and the resulting jobs and investment to the region. I'm here today to express concern for the low forecast growth of the Portland Harbor and the Economic Opportunities Analysis document for the draft City of Portland Comprehensive Plan. The harbor, which includes 4,000 acres, is a major impact employer, and the services provided are a crucial part of the economic vitality of our region and our state. A low forecast signals doubt and sends a negative message about the value of Portland Harbor jobs. Jobs in key industrial sectors such as construction, manufacturing, warehousing, and transportation, as well as the opportunities that these industries bring to the entire region. As the Regional Economic Development Organization, GPI understands the keystone nature of a working harbor to a city, county, and region's economic vitality. Decisions regarding the working harbor impact not only Portland, but also the surrounding region that depend on the port for efficiency, transportation, and jobs. In the Greater Portland 2020 Plan, the region's five-year comprehensive economic development strategy, stakeholders have prioritized making the region a top location for global trade and investment. Moving forward with a low growth forecast will not only challenge this 2020 priority, but also hinder the city and the region's position as a flourishing gateway to international markets. If you believe in the future of our state and the broader region and want to advance regional economic development, labeling the Portland Harbor with a low growth forecast at a time when we're seeing significant expansion in the harbor sends the wrong message. I respectfully request that you return the Portland Harbor forecast to the most likely moderate growth as originally recommended by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff and support the future of our region. Thanks for your time.
So let me pose that same question that I posed to Mr. Stone to you, and that is at the present time in the city's history, we are a commodity and car port. Mm-hmm. And with some shipbuilding on the side. We're not a container port. Our manufacturers are not shipping through the city of Portland. They're shipping through other cities because we don't have a container port anymore. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the realistic prospect that the state will be able to restore container service to our city? I assume your organization is putting a lot of pressure on the governor and the Port of Portland to get that resolved.
Well, we certainly tried. I think that that is a critical issue, and I do think that the possibility of retaining shipper service is within reach. I've heard estimates of sometime between 1 and 2 years, and we will continue to pressure the port and the state to make sure that that happens.
That'd be a good day.
Yes. Thank
you. But why do you think it's most likely that we'll have moderate growth? What gives you to believe that there will be moderate growth?
Well, I haven't combed through the EOA in further detail, but I did look at the analysis that Echo Northwest did do in there, and I do believe that there is still possibility for use of the industrial lands within the harbor. And as we, Greater Portland Inc., is studying large site strategies across the region, I do think that there is a steady supply of demand, a steady demand that is healthy for further industrial growth. Now, there's a lot of work that needs to be done on those lands. I understand that remediation needs to take place, but it's important to make these investments to make sure that we can foresee additional job growth in the future.
Ed, what I'm reading in the plan is that there is a commitment to intensifying in the harbor and cleaning up those lands, so I'm not understanding quite why having a realistic growth expectation is a problem.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for your comment.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. My name is Patty Iverson Summer. I'm the founder and president of Global Trading Resources. We are a customs broker, freight forwarder, NVOCC, non-vessel common carrier, and an indirect air carrier as well. We are where the tires meet the road, so to speak, or where the cargo meets the ship. We set up shipments overseas to come into and go out of this area. We handle the customs clearance and clearances of all federal agencies that have jurisdiction over imported or exported goods. So we see day to day what happens to businesses that are involved in international trade. And I can say it is flourishing. The only sad thing for the Port of Portland is that we do not have a container service anymore. Having been involved with that, with the labor issue and the owner issues, the Pacific Maritime Association contract negotiations for multiple years, and the particular issues between the terminal operator and the ILWU Local 8, once that is resolved and it's in the courts, I would very, very positively say that we should have container service back into the Port of Portland. The configuration of the port is a gem on the West Coast. We have more potential to move more freight from Montana, from Idaho, down to the river, load it up in containers, and ship it all over the world. I travel the world. I meet agents from all over the world, from Africa, all over Asia, Indonesia, Europe. And I have sold the Port of Portland. I have taken Port of Portland literature and told them how advantageous it is to do direct discharges in the Port of Portland. All of my contracts were with Hanjin and Hapag-Lloyd for that very reason, because we could clear cargo much faster, more efficiently, and more economically. All of the containers that were originally discharging in Portland are now discharging in Seattle-Tacoma. That's 5,000 containers a week.
Wow.
Put on the road. I just came back. This is why I don't have a written testimony. I just heard about this hearing and was anxious to be able to discuss this with you. I was in Salem testifying with the Senate Interim Committees on Business and Transportation and Business and Transportation and Economic Development that were held Tuesday and Wednesday. I've been involved in the Oregon Trade Logistics Initiative for the past 6 months that was initiated by the governor. And I guess I have two comments. One, I do believe that you need to upgrade the level of international trade through the port to at least a medium, because it's there. We just have to have the facilities to handle it. And secondly, I would wish that, or I would ask that you coordinate with the state projects. They were very interested in what the proposals were for interim workarounds and incentives and how to enhance the overall transportation abilities of this region.
Good.
The agricultural people are crying.
Yes, I know. Well, thank you. I appreciate you being here. I hope you, if you haven't already done so, that you give Susan or someone else on our planning staff your contact information, because I think you could be a great resource for us. So if you're not already in touch with them, we'd like to stay in touch. Thank you. Thank you all very much. Okay.
Next three are Kate Ross, Mike Rosen, and Jeff Giesler. That's 13, 14, and 15, and they'll be followed by Joseph Miles Kelly, Lightning Watchdog PDX, and Jim Landbenthal, 16, 17, and 18.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Kate Ross, and I'm here today representing Willamette Riverkeeper and our members. Willamette Riverkeeper is dedicated to protecting and restoring the health of the Willamette River. We are here to support the approach taken in the economic opportunities analysis regarding addressing industrial lands along the Willamette. The lower Willamette, as it passes through Portland, represents the most degraded stretch of the river. It has been channelized, deepened, and hardened, and as a result, very little habitat remains. Vast acres of what were once floodplains have been filled and eliminated. The final 10 miles before the confluence are, as you know, a Superfund site. This degraded state undermines the health of human and wildlife populations, as well as access to the river and the quality of our environment. Amen. Every salmon that uses the 187-mile-long mainstem river has to pass through Portland. Willamette Riverkeeper strongly supports the approach taken in the EOA to meeting industrial land demand. Rather than continuing to degrade our environment by converting what little habitat is left to industrial use, the EOA instead focuses on making better use of the industrial lands we already have. Specifically, it focuses on restoring contaminated brownfields to productive use, intensifying use of existing industrial lands, and preventing unnecessary conversion of industrial lands to other uses. We believe that this is the right approach for our environment and our community. The river is already severely degraded. We should not adopt policies that would exacerbate this situation. The EOA and Comp Plan offer an opportunity to chart a new, more sustainable, cleaner, and healthier future for our community, our environment, and our economy. It doesn't say that we won't create new blue-collar jobs. What it says is that we will create those jobs in ways that focus on maximizing the efficiency of existing industrial land base and which recover industrial lands that industry has already contaminated. In essence, we would be saying take better care of what you already have, and that is an approach that all of Portlanders should be able to support. Thank you for your time and careful consideration.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Jeff Geisler. I'm the current chair for Hayden Island, the High Noon. And for three different events, we have not supported industrial development of West Hayden Island, 826 acres. With the latest seismic information that's coming out, I mean, it's become more and more clear that we already know it is a floodplain, and it's not a 100-year floodplain. It's more like a 30-year floodplain. We've had three floods since the turn of the century. But on another note, we're hoping that you stick to the judgment that you've already made within the last year to withdraw it from the list of industrial lands. But there is a lot of economic growth on Hayden Island. We're having banner years at all three of our hotels, the Red Lion, the Oxford Suites. The Thunderbird is going to reopen in the spring. I just got that from Howard Dietrich, the owner of the Red Lion. If anything, East Hayden Island is an economic engine in itself. They might not be industrial jobs, but there are a lot of jobs. We've got 376 new apartments, and there's the potential for maybe 1,000 more because Columbia Crossings, that owns a lot of land, wants to imitate the harbor yachts or the yacht harbor apartments. So the other thing is that there's an obvious increase in economic interest and environmental interest in kayaking and stand-up paddleboarding. So our natural resource, which is the island, which is a great place to live, people love to come here and experience West Hayden Island. And they're not even walking on it. They're just liking to go around in boats and stand-up paddleboards and stuff. So I just want you to know that all the people on Hayden Island have always been against developing that 826 acres. Thank you.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Afternoon. Mayor Hales and Commissioners, I'm Mike Rosen. I've worked in natural resource cleanup protection and program management for the last 27 years, the most recent 13 as the Watershed Division Manager for Portland. I currently run the Eco Literacy Collaborative, a nonprofit dedicated to providing project-based K-12 sustainability education to underrepresented communities. I'm here to express my support of the Planning and Sustainability Commission's supporting documentation for the draft comprehensive plan. In short, I believe it accurately reflects the marine cargo projections for the region and therefore appropriately sets the stage for protection of Portland's limited natural habitat, such as West Hayden Island. Over the past 13 years, the city's watershed group created three powerful tools to accurately assess, protect, and restore Portland's critical environmental habitat and water quality, particularly for riverine environments: the Portland Watershed Management Plan, the Comprehensive Watershed Monitoring Strategy, and the Watershed Health Index and Associated Watershed Report Cards. Each of these tools, based on decades of science and local and national natural resource work, show that in order to protect and enhance local water quality, the natural environment, and environmental health, Portland must continue to take bold steps to protect our remaining natural resources in balance with sensible economic development. We know that for the continued restoration of endangered salmon runs, we must protect shallow water habitat, that the accurate cargo projections contained in the economic opportunities analysis shows that through the reclamation of brownfields and more effective use of existing port policy, Portland can meet the needed industrial land supply demand in order to support ongoing economic development and generation of middle-income jobs. And unfortunately, we know that even after millions of dollars spent over two decades to refute credible science that supports the protection of critical habitat, such as West Hayden Island, the port is intent on the industrial development of West Hayden Island and its habitat destruction. In the most recent process to determine the feasibility of industrial development of West Hayden Island, even given the opportunity to provide only the most minimal habitat protection and mitigation, the port walked away from the table, claiming the cost was too high. The draft comprehensive plan does what it needs to. It sets a solid policy framework that will require the restoration and use of available industrial land while providing economic growth and adequate protection for critical habitat. I encourage the council to adopt this plan and to continue to show the exemplary environmental leadership it has in the past several weeks. Thank you for considering this testimony.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Next three are Joseph Miles Kelly, Lightning Watchdog PDX, and Jim Labenthal. That's 16, 17, and 18. And they'll be followed by Megan Moyer, Jennifer Hudson, and Fred LaCapra. 2021 and
good afternoon. 19, welcome.
2021.
Go ahead, please.
Hello, my name is Joseph Miles Kelly. Currently, I am a welder at Gunderson. I've been working at Gunderson since I graduated high school in 2014. I began in their welding program. It's about a month and a half or so long. When I finished there, I moved out into the Marine Division. And
can you move the mic just a little closer so we can just slide that whole box closer to you?
Is this better?
There you go.
When I finished the welding program, I moved out into the Marine Division. I worked on several of the barges before moving over to the Rail Division, where I am currently at as a repair welder. Currently, I make $19.05 an hour. I receive full medical benefits. I receive 401k benefits, and I occasionally get overtime. I'd like to point out that of my friends, I am the only one who is completely independent of their parents, who, again, I get all these benefits, and I am successful at such a young age. And none of this would have been possible without my position at Gunderson. In addition to the living wage jobs that Gunderson provides, I have also had an opportunity to develop my skills, be it through on-the-job training or through the classes that Gunderson provides, like blueprint reading or any of the other classes. As the City Council considers the comprehensive plan, I would like them to consider the opportunities that companies like Gunderson provide youths like myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
Yes, my name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. Pertaining to the economic opportunity analysis, one of the biggest concerns, obviously I want to see the brownfields cleaned up, and some of the problems I have on that is that I think the city tends to land bank too many properties, hold on to them too long. I want to see them go back to the private sector, put back on the tax rolls. We need to have that income coming in and also these properties being developed. Issue number two is that I have a big concern on this plan not having any emphasis on the levee that runs up along the Portland International Airport. We're currently trying to get that certified accreditation on that by FEMA, by Army Corps of Engineers. In my opinion, we're going to need to rebuild that levee. In my opinion, our cost is going to be anywhere from $5 to $7.5 billion. We need to put that at the top priority of this city over any of the bridges being brought up to seismic standards. We need to protect the Portland International Airport at any cost. We need to protect any and all businesses at any cost. We need to protect the people at any cost. Again, this levee will not meet the New Orleans standards. It needs to be rebuilt, and we need to begin at looking at the federal funding options on this. And we need to phase this in. Phase one will be to protect the Portland International Airport. Again, when we're talking climate change and the problems we might have in the future, we all agree there's going to be excessive flooding. And we need to make sure that this levee is brought up to today's New Orleans standards. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Jim.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Loventhal. I live in Northeast Portland. I'm a member of Riverside Golf Club, and I'm speaking for Riverside on the EOA. Two aspects of the EOA that I'd like to mention is the forecast and also the statements in the EOA that talk about our eventual demise at the end of the 20-year time frame. The economic forecast for the golf industry and in the EOA, we believe, is a little bit too simplistic, too coarse, if you will. And if you take a little more nuanced look at kind of what's going on in the industry, you might reach some different conclusions, at least about some of the courses. A couple of aspects that I think come into play in this. We are operating on a very different kind of business model, a membership-based business model versus a pay-as-you-go model. And that creates a very different set of dynamics in the industry. The document cites the decline of golf at inner-city locations. We actually see that as a great plus for us because we're well-located. It's a very vibrant neighborhoods, both in the Portland area and in Vancouver. And being sort of centrally located in the region, we have a selling point in terms of, especially with traffic these days, and all of us are concerned about travel times. And we find it's a factor people use when they're making choices about social and golf memberships.
We also have a growing population base that I think also comes into play here in terms of what happens with the golf industry. Also, a number of national figures include resort